in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter, and it is crazy. I'm almost giddy. I will probably do my girls laugh three or four times on this. We're with Alex Boguski, which is literally insane to me. My mind is slightly blown. Alex, thank you for being on the CMO Suite.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
That probably sounded like
I'd like to get at least three giggles out of you.
Did it sound fanboyish?
It sounded odd.
Well, there's one. You got one. I got two more to go.
All right.
Score.
We've worked with WWE as a client in the past, the wrestling group, and there's something they call a mark. And so a mark is somebody who's kind of like a fanboy, right? They're like, they're so such super fans. And so when we would do meet and greets, sometimes we would always say to them, okay, you know, you're going to meet Hulk Hogan or Kane or whoever. And so try to be normal. And that never happens. Ultimately, they're so calm, and then they walk. And then as soon as they see them, like, oh my God.
So, I'm so weird around celebrities.
Who's a celebrity that you feel like you're a fanboy for?
Oh, I don't know if I'm a fanboy of any of them, but they all just make me very uncomfortable because I don't know how to treat them.
Yeah.
I don't know if we connect, if we're really connecting. Yeah. I just find the whole thing troubling because
I already got two.
I have two out here.
You find it troubling because it just feels awkward?
Yeah. Like,
as awkward as this, or are you, is this not awkward yet?
No, like if
because clearly I'm not a celebrity, why it's not awkward. You're the celebrity, so
if we connect and we become friends, it'll happen very naturally. It won't be weird. But
is that an option?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Good. I just wasn't sure.
Absolutely. Always an option.
Who's a celebrity that you've met that you felt like, well, that was a little strange?
I met P. Diddy, and there was a whole thing. Like, you get coached on whether you can call him Sean, Puffy, mm-hmm. P. Diddy. And I don't remember what the correct
terminology was at the time.
But the oddest thing was he sat down. You know, he showed up late, thank God, because I was running late. And then he got there after me, and that was a huge relief for everybody. He sat down. We got introduced, and he said, I think I've met you before. And I said, no, I don't think so.
Had you met him before?
No, I would. Do you remember these things, right? Like, you remember if you've met P. Diddy before. So it was extremely awkward, right? So, and he kept insisting that we had met before.
So why not just go with it? Just be like, oh,
We finally had to. Yeah, it was like, yeah,
it was awesome. You
know, probably at the thing.
We did that thing. It was so cool.
The big celebrity deal thing.
Who's a celebrity that you've met? I didn't mean to turn this into entertainment tonight. We started the show, so you won't hear this on your side out there, guys. But, well, first of all, we're in the woodshed, which is insane. This is Alex's podcast studio. It's fantastic, by the way. Congratulations.
Yeah. We built it from scratch because we have facilities that do that kind of thing.
It's awesome. So we normally, as most of you probably know, we normally podcast out of iHeart Studios in New York City. I'm going to tell you that story at some point because I'll soliloquy at some point in here. And I'll tell you that story because it's an interesting one when we're talking about podcasts. But every once in a while, we come remote. And in this case, not only did we come remote to Denver, but you guys were kind enough to host us. And so before I jump into anything else, I want to say thank you. Thanks for allowing us in the woodshed. I don't know if you actually knew that they were going to walk you in here or not. They scheduled an hour of your time. And so you were probably like, okay, where am I now? And they're like, oh, we're in the podcast studio. And you're probably like, oh, I didn't prep for the show. I'm like, no, you're on somebody else's show.
Did that happen? That is exactly what just happened.
It would not shock me. Yeah. Listen.
Not because they didn't let me know and then it's not in my schedule and I could have the foresight, but I don't always. And
that probably is a true story, isn't it? Did he have any idea he was doing a podcast today?
I had an idea.
This morning. It's so true. I've listened to your publicity team was kind enough to send us some of the podcasts that you've done in the past. And I don't want to say you're a prolific podcaster because you're not, but you've done a couple of other ones. And most of them talk a lot about, they follow kind of a similar pattern in some ways of talking about your early life and your early career and how you ended up here and why in the world would you come back. And so I'm going to try to skip some of that because most of those podcasts are great. Yeah. And they're actually much, much, much better than mine. So if you want to know everything that Alex did growing up in Miami, if you were a previous girlfriend that dated him when he was in high school there and you wondered why he didn't take you to the beach there or any of that stuff, go listen to those other podcasts because they're awesome and amazing and much, much smarter people than I am. But one of the things I heard in one of those podcasts, and so I'll bring this back to celebrity, I promise I'll put a button on this, was I feel like one of the guys that your publicity team had sent me to their podcast said he had met you. And I think maybe he had even gotten like an hour of your time somewhere. He was building something up. Maybe he'd worked at Crispin at some point and he felt like that was this magical moment to him. And I think you're on his podcast and he was like, do you remember that? And you were like, but you must get some of that. I don't think it's.
Well, I don't have a great memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So someone asked me yesterday, actually, it's like, where would you rate your memory between 1 and 10? I said a 1.
Yeah.
So
you think that's baked in, like literally baked in, like you just don't have a good memory?
I never have.
I think there's also an element to it that you are a brand. You were a brand even before you left and before you came back and before you're doing all this, but you are a brand. You're a name. And so you must get pulled constantly all the time into things sometimes like this. And so while it may be almost that P. Diddy moment to some extent for some people, anytime you meet somebody like that, if you ran into P. Diddy today, he might be like, wait, we met? You know,
I would
there's
hope
no shame
he,
in that.
Yeah, like, I would hope he wouldn't remember me.
You'd hope, at least from that experience. Yeah. So let's talk a tiny bit maybe about some of the people that have kind of come through your life a little bit since we're on that. Do you remember a guy that used to work for you? This is not walk down memory lane. Now he's feeling on the spot.
Oh,
isn't
I am. Yeah, because I just told you I had no memory.
Steve Babcock, do you remember him?
Yes,
at all?
I do.
Okay,
yes,
see?
I do.
So look, you're one for one. That's it. I'm not going to drop any more names other than Mr. Porter. Maybe I might make sure you remember him
because
we literally just saw him on the way out today. I'm leaving, guys. Thanks for moving the studio 10 feet from my window. That was one of the funny things that happened while I was standing here. But I got to interview Steve. We do... we're doing a summer podcast. We're doing these in seasons. And so the CMO suite we're doing, this is one of our last two episodes, by the way. We saved you for last. We try to interview one agency person each season. And the guy we were going to interview said no. So then I was like, oh, no, I'm just kidding. You were first on our list. So, but we interviewed Steve a couple weeks ago when we were in New York because we're doing a summer podcast called The Digital Fix. And it was a suggestion from a buddy of mine, Rich Antoniello, who owns Complex Networks. And he was saying, I love the show. I love what you've done with it. Well, he maybe didn't say love because he doesn't always talk soliloquious like that to me.
It's what he meant though. He meant.
I'm
say,
definitely parsing his words because I think he was like, eh.
You're killing it.
But eh from him I take is I'm loving
it. Yeah.
But he was saying, pick a subject and dive deep. And now that you've earned some street cred, I think was his point, because we've tried to be protective and safe and have interesting conversations with one guest that do typically kind of tell their life story to some extent. You've done enough of those now, so we won't dig into that too deep. But he was saying kind of dig deep. So we brought Steve in and we had a conversation with him and he was telling us a funny story about you. And I promise I'm going to stop talking in a second to let you talk. What do you remember about Steve?
I remember he did when we first started doing a show from this lobby.
Yeah.
He hijacked it from, I don't know if he ran across with no clothes on, his underwear, something like that. He did some streaking on our show. I don't know if I could say that. I'll say it anyway. I was really trying to encourage him to come back here recently.
Yeah.
So
you talked about that a little bit.
Did you?
Yeah. I think he's got an incredible love for what was built when you moved from Miami, which was a weird experience for me. This is the part where I tell one more story and then we get to talk to you the rest of the time. I called on Miami as a media seller back when I was like these kids' age, and I picked up Miami as a region. And the guy who had to take me down, a buddy of mine, Shane Reeves, said, we're going to go see two agencies today. We're going to go see this media buyer, Marta Davies, who was this old school New Yorker who worked out of her house. And so she, you know, she's got the cigarettes and you better give me this damn radio for $10 off or I'm canceling everything tomorrow. He said, we're going to go there and then we're going to go to this agency called Chris Reporter Bogoski. So I was like, okay. So we go to her house first and I don't think she'd mind me telling the story. I think her pot dealer was there at the time. You know, she must have had a medicinal card before it was a thing, but literally I think he was there. And it was just crazy. It was kind of chaos. You know, you come to find out that she has a heart of gold, but it was like the stereotypical, like, God damn it. You know, what are you kids? You know,
yeah,
and then
that's great.
I was like, oh God, this was a little bit shocking to me. And then went over to Crispin and it was like, oh, it was almost these two different worlds and none was right or none was wrong. But you walk into that. And so it's weird. It's weird to kind of sit here and remember back when I was young, walking in there and just thinking, oh, this is what an advertising agency is in my head. It's the Mad Men version of that. Do you remember most of your days in Miami fondly from that time?
Oh, yeah. It the industry or just being in Miami?
In general.
Yeah. I was never, if you think about the vibe of her versus maybe what you came into, we always had a West Coast vibe in the agency.
Yeah.
Even though we're East Coast shop and Miami being East Coast, literally and in every way and culturally. But growing up, I always had a fondness for the West Coast. I raced bikes and I spent a lot of time on the West Coast and it just felt better to me. And I never really honestly loved Miami. But you make the best of wherever you are, I think. You should. Why not?
And that's where you grew up.
Grew up there. Born and raised.
And so to put a button on that with the Steve thing, it was just interesting to talk to him, to talk about his time than when you moved here. I don't think he ever worked when you guys were in Miami. I think he showed up
after we were here. Yeah.
Yeah. And so let's skip ahead to that time here for a second, because that's a good segue for me. And I think he may move. I know he just wrapped his time with Vayner, mm-hmm. and he's got a couple interesting projects that he's working on. It's really cool stuff in the kind of crowdsourcing space, but it wouldn't shock me if at some point they spend some time back here in Denver, because he seems to really think of it fondly.
Yeah.
What brought you here? What brought you to Denver?
Well, I had some clients here, thought it was a neat place every time I'd visit. We had a hurricane hitting Miami. My wife, I wanted to get the wife and kids out of town, and I tried to get flights to New York. There were none. I said, what do you think about somewhere else? She said, you're always talking about moving to Boulder. Why don't we go visit there? I don't know that I was always talking about it, but maybe I was. I think she planted that seed in my head.
One of your guys was talking to me earlier. He's one of your show producers, and he was, I'm going to forget since they don't have Mike out there, the term that he used. But basically it was that where you're kind of implanting a thought.
Suggestion.
Kind of that suggestion thing.
Yeah.
So do you think she really was?
I don't know. She's brilliant. So it's like,
could have.
She's manipulated almost everything in a great way.
Do they all do that?
I hope that so. If you're smart and lucky, you would have a wife like mine that manipulates things in such an awesome way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you ended up literally out here. If you had been able
well,
to book
then we
a trip
tried to
New
do
York.
We decided to move. I went back and I said, "Hey, I'm going to be moving to Boulder." And my partners laughed and Chuck said, "No, he's serious. I could tell."
How was that conversation?
It wasn't hard. I just said, "Maybe I'll semi-retire, you know, I'll go out there and kind of have a little office, whatever works." But I felt like it was something I wanted to do for the family and for the kids, because I didn't want them to do junior high in Miami for whatever reason.
Sure.
It was just
good
a vision
city,
that
city,
I had.
It is what it
yeah,
is.
It just was a vision that I had. So
I've had some good times in Miami.
It's a great place.
Yeah.
And so that became sort of an away team, which was 20 people. That became 50 people by the time we came out and called it the Donner Party. Just to be funny, but people would say, that's not, you know, that didn't go well for those people.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's what makes it funny. Or maybe it's just not funny.
Was it just a feeling? Just a feeling in your gut?
It was a feeling for me personally, but it was also something that I wanted to give to a lot of the people that had built the agency who were from the Midwest. That was where almost all the senior people were from. And they weren't in Miami because they wanted to be in Miami. They were in Miami for Crispin. So I thought, what if you could work in a place you loved and live in a place you loved and you wouldn't have to sacrifice either one? Would that be Boulder? Then we did due diligence and we looked at Austin and San Fran and Portland and
all good cities. We picked lots of
good cities and then selected this one.
And that was it.
That was it.
Out you came.
Pretty much.
And you had no kids at the time, right?
No, I had kids.
You did have kids.
Yeah, my kids were 9 and 6.
Okay. And twins since then?
No, I just got the 9.
Okay.
They're now grown up people. They're 22 and
they're not even kids anymore.
No, they're grown ups.
Yeah. How's that?
Having grown ups or being a sort of empty nester?
A little bit of both.
It's cool. I'm trying to think.
I just got the first huff
from you. Very well.
There's a contemplative element to that look.
Yeah. My daughter's still at home and she's going to community college. And so that's nice. She's still in the house. My son, he moved away and I thought I would die, you know. And I tell friends, I'm like, look, it's survivable. That's all I can tell you.
I have twin 15-year-olds.
Oh.
Boy and a girl. That's
going to be rough.
There's some pain coming is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Speaking of pain, I feel like that's a weird segue, isn't it? This industry, it's a tough industry.
Very tough.
You know, and it creates a lot of stress, whether you're on the agency side or certainly on the marketing side. You know, the show is called the CMO Suite. We wanted to have a podcast really for CMOs predominantly because we were trying to figure out how do we talk to these guys and girls that are in the industry. And we felt like as an agency, we have a tiny little small agency that our outreach just sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter how good the things were that we were working on. We were working on good stuff. And so it was frustrating sometimes, like, we did good stuff here. Why aren't we talking to more people? But they run into the same issues that everybody else is. And it's hard to cut through that clutter sometimes to some extent. And so we built our podcast out as a way to be able to create really initially just some unique outreach. But I think what's been amazing from it, for me, at least somewhat cathartically, is you realize we're all just people, you mm-hmm. know, we all just get up in the morning. We got to figure out how to navigate our way in during the day. And whether you're on the agency side of it or you're on the CMO side of it or the VP side of it, it's tricky
mm-hmm.
and it's changing so fast, Alex.
Yeah.
So fast. It almost feels too fast.
I think it is too fast moving. No one really that I've met seems like they have have a really good sense of where it's going.
Did you feel like it had settled for a little while even before you left? And we'll cover that in a little bit. Did you feel like you had settled kind of into a rhythm, at least to some extent? You kind of knew when a pitch would come in, what a pitch was going to kind of look like and feel like at that point, maybe 7 years ago, it was the same kind of stuff you had to pull together to some extent. But now it's everything. You've got all digital, all this, all that, and it's almost overcomplicated it.
I don't know. I mean, I think the more the, you know, people say the more things change, the more they stay the same. I'm always looking for the commonalities and, you know, the specifics, the digitalness, the where the data is coming from, all those things change. Maybe the accuracy is improving, but like you said, it's people are people and they're acting like people, no matter how much you wish they'd act like machines.
Yeah.
I love that you're out talking to CMOs. I mean, we've done two shows with CMOs and I find it really important because more for people that listen to our show, which hopefully some of them work here.
Which is awesome,
here.
The Woodshed.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. Find it on iTunes. Are you on Spotify?
Check it out. Yeah.
It's good. I've listened to several episodes before I came.
I listened to several
on the way in. I listened to the one, I'm going to let you segue on your point. I didn't mean to step on you.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm prone to do that. I'm sure I'll get a note from your producer. Like, stop stepping on the guests, Sean. You do that all the time. But you just had on the people who make your theme song.
Yeah. They came on and we talked about music.
You did.
Yeah.
I have a friend, Jennifer Frommer, who works for Sony Music. We had her on earlier this year. We felt like that was an interesting one. So sometimes we have on CMOs and every once in a while we have on people that CMOs should know maybe. Mm-hmm. And it felt like she was one of those because she helps license music for Sony. But her big hook or her big thing that she said was start with us first sometimes before you come with everything's all done, start first. It was funny. You said the same thing.
That's where we wound up. Yeah.
Yeah. You said the same thing on the podcast.
And what I was going to say about CMOs that I think people overlook is we like to wish, or maybe we just aren't thinking hard enough, but we sort of assume that they're an ultimate decision maker. They are C-suite. They're in charge of marketing, but they're going to work this through with other people. And I think we overlook that. When we present, I've asked this question to CMOs. It's like, have you noticed that some agencies make it easier for you to take it up and down the flagpole and the others make it not so easy? And he said, it was surprising. He's like, I never thought about it, but oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, so different. So different.
Is it because there's just not a standard way for any of us to do this?
No, I don't think
no
we,
book, there's
like,
no,
which, who of us really employs enough empathy? I think it's just empathy. Do you have empathy for the person that you're presenting to?
Yeah.
Who is in a way a god over your fate, but you still have to have empathy if you're going to be effective.
It's a weird business. It's just weird. When you think of all the other industries that are out there and all the other ways that they produce work and find partnerships and solve problems, this one is so strange sometimes. It's a weird thrown together arranged marriage sometimes. And to your point, the empathy piece is almost like you don't feel the time for that. They're so pressed for time, I feel like a lot of CMOs.
Yeah.
And so we feel like sometimes on the agency side, and I'm sure you guys do sometimes too, it's hurry up and wait. But sometimes you almost hold that against a CMO when really they were told to hurry, hurry, hurry. They've got all the parts that they can have. And now they're waiting on the person above, the purse strings.
Yeah. And I really, what I want to get out of a pitch is I want to get that connection.
Yeah.
More than... really more than, I think I value it maybe more than the piece of business. You know, they don't happen that often, but you have those long standing relationships that occur through this process. And sometimes they pay off multiple times, which is great, but they always pay off because you know from your show, CMOs, they're looking for advice from other CMOs a lot.
Yeah.
I worry sometimes that the pitches that are run by consultants have so many rules and many times the rules are getting in the way of what you want, which is an actual relationship. So that's not optimal. I understand it. We deal with it. But I love that there's other ones where they run them in a very different way, right? Consultant or not consultant or whatever. And they're really looking for the relationship and the understanding. That's awesome. And that's all you can want out of the process, really.
Was there one that you've remember from either your time prior to or your time coming back that was one of those? Maybe you came in not sure what that relationship would feel like. And you ended up just kind of building I don't want to say lifelong friendship, but to some extent, maybe just that. I don't know.
I mean, Russ Klein was here yesterday and he's a very polarizing figure in the business, which I guess I am too.
A little bit.
And so we've only worked on one thing, but it's just been, he's very provocative And I like talking to him because he makes me think hard. He's a really smart guy, and he's always challenging. So I've just enjoyed that relationship. Carrie Martin, we went from Mini to Volkswagen with her, and that was really amazing at Mini, and not so great at Volkswagen, but
it happens.
It happens. Yeah.
I try to tell the younger people on my team, I try to help them to understand that peer stacking element to some extent, because that's a little hard maybe for them to understand that you can get a return call from somebody and why can't they? Mm. Or they're trying to maybe, they're an account manager, they're a new business development person, they're trying to call on the head of Mini. And so sometimes we try to impart on them, make friends that are your peers right now, because those are the people that if you treat them with care and trust and you take care of them, those are the people that will move up. Mm-hmm. And as they move up, you're their guy or you're their girl. And so when they need help with something, sometimes your name will be the name that just pops into their head. And it keeps you from having to answer every RFP that's out there, which is probably the worst process that's ever been created.
And I don't think, this is definitely not me saying that I was good at that, because I think in general, early in my career, all I cared about was the ads, you know, what we were making, the work. And now I've just, you know, you're older, you care about different things. And so I'm much more, at this point, I'm much more interested in the relationships.
You left.
I did. They call it the coma here.
Really? There's a name for it. The coma.
Remember when you were in the coma for 8 years?
Yep. Yeah. Who was it?
It's like a soap opera.
Right? Well, I think it was it. Newhart, I don't know. There was one of those shows. Mm-hmm. I use the word Newhart. Like these guys would even have any concept as to what that is.
Yeah.
There was one of those shows where the last season was like, oh, it was a coma or whatever. Yeah. And you're like, ugh, they call it the coma here.
Yeah. That's what they call
it. How did it feel? How did it feel?
I enjoyed the coma very much.
Sure.
So
what was the impetus from your perspective? What was that moment where you're like, okay, I'm just done. I'm done with this part of this.
Yeah. I wasn't sure what to do next. I'd kind of accomplished way more than I thought I would accomplish, and that my parents thought I would accomplish,
or any
friends I had would thought I would accomplish. So I was very happy with that. The earnout was done. It wasn't going to be mine anymore. So you have a different relationship with it. And the clients were really big, and it wasn't, you know, I love mid-size, you know, changing the world kind of clients are a lot of fun.
Isn't it weird that that's what you aspire to, like when you're getting into this, or you're
cursed to have small clients when you're getting into it.
Yeah.
You know, not cursed, because they're awesome too.
But even some CMOs, they end up at a place that's a good place and they think they need to be at Mini, or they think they need to be at BMW or whatever.
Yeah.
And they fight to get there. And then you get there and you realize, oh my God, this is so corporate. I miss working for this cannabis company that let me, mm-hmm. that I said, these are 10 ideas. And they're like, great, let's try 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did it start to feel a little like that? I know some of the stuff that maybe you've talked about in the past kind of spoke to that to some extent.
It was just a little less interesting and really difficult to have an impact, right? Because you have gigantic clients and you need another gigantic, not even big, like gigantic. So, you know, a lot of things were conspiring to say, hey, let's try something else. And being in Boulder, actually, Boulder has more venture capital than any other place per capita.
We raised money from here.
Did you?
We started a digital company called UConnex. There's a small company here called Choosel. I guess maybe they're not even that small.
Choosel, yeah.
So we worked with them early on, and they introduced us to one of their investors, and we raised capital out of Boulder.
Yeah.
So I've been here a couple times. It's so weird.
It is. So there's a lot of investment. It means there's a lot of startups.
It's the vibe.
I think that startups are the extreme sports of business. So this is a place that attracts risk takers. There's the climbing, there's the cycling, there's the Olympics, there's the skiing.
And you cycle every morning, or you try to cycle every morning?
I ride a lot. Yeah. So that led me, I think in a lot of ways, I wanted to get into that world too. And so I did angel investing for all of the 8 years. I also started a small VC firm with a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Called Batshit Crazy.
And you wrote a little bit as well. Did you write? Because you have a couple books out. I don't remember if you wrote those during the break.
Those I wrote before I left. Okay. Yeah, I don't think I wrote anything after I was. I've started on some things. You know, some piece of fiction. My wife's family has an incredible story about her great grandfather, who was a senator in Cuba, and he was assassinated on the steps of the Capitol building. And,
like the Godfather.
It's wild. And, you know, we've researched it. Much of it's documented in the New York Times, because the New York Times followed Cuba closely.
This was her grandfather?
That was her grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah. Her dad's father. So anyway, I've started on that a couple times.
Is she Cuban?
She's Cuban.
Yeah. So you met her when you were in Miami?
Mm-hmm.
And so did you know that story from early on, or was that a story that got handed to you along the way?
The way it showed up was she went out to lunch with another guy that was working at the agency. And while they were at lunch, they triangulated and realized that her grandfather had shot his grandfather in a duel. And then her grandfather's family had assassinated him.
That's insane.
Yeah, crazy story.
And so did you start to write this screenplay or a book?
I've started to write the book, yeah.
Is the purpose of doing this podcast to get that story out so that we can
get
some VC funding and start doing some movie production?
If you're out there and you're interested, yeah.
Well, it's better than half the crap on Netflix right now. So
it's a good story. It's a good story. And
how far did you get in writing this?
Oh, in terms of the outline?
Yeah.
I've got the outline and I'm probably third of the way done.
And where does it sit now? Just on a shelf?
It just sits in my computer. Sitting there.
Should we nudge him
does Andy Garcia listen to your show? Because I would really love to work with Andy Garcia on this. Let's make this happen, Andy.
He may not listen to this, but the beauty of podcasting is you can take little snippets, especially because we shoot on video. We'll button this up. We'll send it to Andy.
We'll make it happen. Yeah.
Can we just say, Andy, we need you?
I went to...
Forget the CMO suite. Let's just make this podcast all about how do we get this movie produced. We'll take the cameras with us. I'll quit my day job.
There's the true story of really what happened that I started to cobble together from all the articles, right? And then there's the family
version of the story,
version of the history, which is kind of not entirely accurate, I don't think. And then there's what you have to, just the storytelling aspect of it that you've got to add to it to fill it out, right? And I was really worried that her father would be mad because of some of the... Well, essentially, my wife's grandmother ran away with her grandfather.
This story is crazy.
He left a marriage that he was in and two children and then went with this woman who was Anna's grandmother and traveled around South America. And it's not wholesome. It's not a perfectly wholesome story.
Is your father-in-law still alive?
Yes. And I spoke to him about it and I said, here's how I see the story. This is what I think really happened. And he was comfortable with it. So it was a big moment.
Let's leave the book. Let's just leave it for where it is for right now.
Okay.
Maybe for now.
Yeah.
Because maybe that's a story best told a different day. I don't know. It sounds like it's crazy.
You keep talking about it. I'm trying to stop.
I love it. I know. I mean, leave it there because I'm concerned that your father-in-law is going to come banging on this door in this amazing building, which by the way, I'm going to...
No. He's okay with it. Yeah.
That's a crazy story.
And I told him, you got to take a certain amount of license with these things, right?
Is that your next, now that you're back, how long are you back for? Does anybody know how long he's back for?
I mean, we're
not how long he's in the show, but how long are you back?
I'm committed through the week. Is this Friday already?
It's Friday.
Okay. So we don't know.
Is he week by week at this point, guys?
I'm always week by week.
Nobody knows.
No, I figure I'm here for a
bit of a spell.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
It takes time.
It does take time. Why'd you come back?
I thought it would be interesting and I was right. It's super interesting, but really hard. And I have some theories of things that I would have done if I stayed in the industry and they weren't happening. So I thought, well, maybe this is a platform to try some of those things. And my wife had gone back to school. My kids are all in school. I'm the only one without anything productive to do.
Other than writing this amazing book, but yeah.
And investing and stuff like that. Yeah.
And how did that conversation go? What did you talk to other friends prior to? Did you kind of test the waters a little bit and go, well, what would it look like if I came back in the office a little bit?
Well, I thought for sure. Chuck said, hey, what do you think about coming back? And I've always said, no. I mean, my life is and was nice.
And still is nice, yeah.
Still is nice.
You have the power of no. That's a pretty powerful weapon, Alex. Do you realize that sometimes? Is that a weird thing to say? You have the ability to say no, and so many people, maybe they do, they haven't adjusted their lifestyle around the ability to say
no. I will give you one insight in which...
I get one out of this 45 minutes. I get one insight.
Hopefully you had more than... I'll
take this one.
This was one that really hurt me.
Is this a sound bite? Let's go.
No, this really... So there's the notion of like, fuck you money, right? Have you ever heard that term?
Sure. I don't have it, but yeah, I've heard it.
You aspire, like maybe you do, maybe you don't. But people talk about, boy, that guy's got fuck you money, or I'd really like to have fuck you money. And...
He just took this up from a PG-13. Now we're all up in MA.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. And forget it. It's fuck you.
You can bleep it. And people know what we're talking about. And then there's the notion that you've spent so much time caring so much and working so hard, and it'd be so great to just not have to care about anything, right? And that's part of whatever the coma, the semi-retirement, is you get to that place and you're like, I'm going to do my own thing and I'm not going to have to stress. I'm not selling anybody on anything ever. Right. The problem with not having to care is that you can be there and then you don't care about anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I got to generate care and I'm going to have to do things, because you can't live your life like that. It's just not interesting. It's not fun, but I don't want to discourage anybody from doing the exact same thing. That was just my journey with it.
Well, and maybe it's balanced like everything else in our lives, right? Maybe again, we aspire, we get there, we realize we're working so hard for ourselves, but lots of other people, some of who don't care, some of whom you're busting your butt to try to ensure that they have a job and a paycheck, and they walk in on a Tuesday and go, I'm leaving to go somewhere else. And you're like, I just saved your job last year. Maybe there's so much of that that happens sometimes in life. You're smiling.
Just because I'm glad you're saying all this stuff instead of me. Yeah.
But it happens. It's life. And when you get to that point where you're near that top, whether you're a CMO or a VP or a CEO or at the level that you're at, it can feel sometimes as if, why do I care so much? Why am I investing so much? And yet some of these people, it's 4:30.
It's a blessing though. Like to be able to care.
Yeah.
And to be able to care a lot is a blessing.
But maybe you needed that break. Maybe
for sure. I needed a break. No doubt.
So sometimes it's a level set or just a reset.
Yeah.
Maybe your reset took longer than others. Maybe for some people that reset is a 2-week vacation or a month off or just a change in some other environment or find your happiness.
I never thought I would do one thing for my whole life. It was not a goal. It was not something that I assumed I would do. I've done a bunch of things now. I do this and I do other things as well. So it's different this time too, because it's not like I've left the investment world. It's not like I don't do the venture capital. I do those things.
And you're still finding time for yourself as well. I know you bike a lot.
Yeah.
I was told you have a quiver of bikes. Is this a thing?
They say quiver. It's a term.
I've learned two things. I've learned, again, there's a balance somewhere between leaving and coming back and making sure that you still care.
Caring and not caring.
And now I've learned there's such a thing as called a quiver of bikes, which I've been told is similar to having a bunch
it's
of
like
arrows,
the arrows.
In the quiver.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Talk about your bike thing. Let's talk about that. What's your obsession with it?
Currently, I like everything about bikes. Bikes have saved my life multiple times.
One of your woodsheds. Did you talk with one of the teams that either built your bike or is a bike manufacturer? I feel like there was something about bikes in one of the shows, or maybe you just talk about it a lot. I'm not sure.
We probably talk. I mean, we've had some other people that come out of the industry too. Going through a divorce, you know, meeting my wife, her buying me a bike for my first mountain bike for my birthday. You know, it was like a major moment that then got me into mountain biking, that then got me into, you know, having clients like Shimano and Schwinn and Giro, which was very much the catalyst for what allowed the agency to do the kind of work it ultimately did. And anytime I've ever, leaving this industry, you know, the first thing I did was just ride my bike a lot, like ride it downtown, ride it around. And so
there's something
I've been
cathartic
into
about that too, isn't it?
The bike, there's something about a bike.
There is.
Honestly, it's absolutely one of the greatest inventions. Just specifically, it's still the most efficient way to move one individual in terms of energy of anything that's ever been created.
There's something with our bodies though. And so as we get older, I'm 49. My club age is 38. I'm going out with the guys tonight. Think I can pass, guys? I work that in every podcast, by the way, Alex. If you ever listen to one, get him to listen to one and he'll remember
you
me.
Next time. You being 38 is the trick there?
My club age. I always work my club age in there.
Club age?
Yeah, my club age. You know, it's the age, you know, when you're at the club. Come on, Alex.
I don't know this stuff.
Okay. That said, I bought a bike again this year. I'm riding it when I can, and I've done a couple of triathlons. There's something about it. There's something that your body almost needs it or wants it.
It's magical. And then there's the fact that like they would just tip over. It shouldn't even work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Which is just the centrifugal force.
The first time I trained on the bike with the clips.
It didn't work.
Well, you forget. So you learn because you're kind of practice falling. I felt like a little kid, on my first bicycle, you know, when you take the wheels off and you're like practice falling. So I've got this thin bike and I'm trying to practice. And then we end up riding up somewhere and you forget. And I'm there, my buddy stops and he unclips and I was just like, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I literally fell up, scraped my leg up. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. We've all done that. Anyone with clips.
So I shouldn't feel bad.
No.
And you snowboard as well.
If you're out there and you want to follow my Instagram, it's Bro Gusky. And that's where I live the life that I wish that I had all the time.
I don't know if I follow that one or not. Oh, I should.
It's just all bikes and skis.
I love Instagram. I love
very average bike riding, average skiing, and average surfing. If you're looking for that kind of content on the internet,
it's Bro Gusky.
Bro Gusky. Yeah.
Do you love Instagram? How do you feel about Instagram?
I feel that I'd like it a lot. And I like how much they've nailed me and know exactly what ads I want. I've spent enough time there.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see ads. Apparently, I want to see ads about bikes and innovative tool ideas.
You ski a lot as well, right?
I do.
And so do you get ads for ski yet? No? And there maybe?
Yeah.
What do you love about skiing?
Same thing. Just been doing it my whole life. It's a little bit...
Do you snowboard?
I spent years snowboarding, but it was those years that I was working really hard and I couldn't put in enough days. So I was pretty good skier, really average snowboarder.
Yeah. So if we're on your Instagram, we'll see mostly more bikes than skiing.
Well, it's going to weight bikes. It's about the weight surfing.
The time away that you were
to Hawaii.
I feel like social media completely exploded during that time.
Mm.
I mean, you had MySpace or maybe.
Well,
maybe,
we had,
maybe
we had
Facebook.
No, Twitter was big.
Twitter. Facebook, that's my worst one.
Facebook was.
Do you
big.
Like Twitter? Do you still do a
I
lot
did,
of that?
I did like it a lot, yeah. and I was there early, so I've got an
investment
good,
in
good
it.
Good following.
Some sort?
Well, it's changed a lot. Yeah. So it seems to be that I've got 90,000 people that ignore me, which is maybe that's how it works. Whereas Instagram, I have 1,200 people that are somewhat interested.
I think that's an interesting part of the model, though, to some extent now is so. Because I'm a big LinkedIn person. I think you are as well,
right? I like the LinkedIn.
Yeah. You do like the LinkedIn.
I like what's
going on
there.
I see you
on
that a lot.
Yeah.
And I think your show producer, that's how he even contacted you to help build this to some extent. Maybe it was initially on LinkedIn. You may not even remember that, but that's the story that I heard.
He's saying no. Yes or no? Yes. Yeah. Okay.
This is yes. The up and down is yes.
Up and down. Okay.
Yeah. So if you're listening, you can't. Yeah.
Get those confused.
Alex had his gummies this morning and he can't see that far, but that's how he found you, was reaching. And we may have even found you the same. Wait, we find a lot of our guests on LinkedIn. I love that platform.
And the algorithms still allow for content to
filter properly and not all paid.
And get shared and not all paid. And so I like that about it.
I think
it
Twitter
too.
Tipped that other direction. Facebook certainly did for me. I'm out of that. What do you think about Facebook? How do you feel in this industry, whether you're CMO or VP or CEO or whatever, social media has to be a part of every campaign now. But it's weird, isn't it? It's kind of weird to even look at elections. I don't want to get political or anything like that, but it's weird to see. I don't know. You've got kids that are grown up. Mine are still small. And I feel like I love the fact they're on Instagram because I can kind of see what's happening in their life. But I'm sad too. I'm a little sad because again, I think there's no bad pictures. Mm. And now they don't, they think all their friends have this amazing life. And maybe that's also kind of what we want to put out there sometimes. What do you think of it?
Yeah. I try not to get nostalgic about things.
We have you for 20 more minutes. We're looking at the clock. That's why we keep looking at the window from time to time.
I try not to get nostalgic about what was and what, and I think that things are generally similar, even though the trappings of them look very different.
Does social media play a factor as you're thinking of campaign direction now?
Sure, of course. I mean, I think social media, it's less of a factor and more of just a aspect of life. And so I don't think you really separate it from anything you're doing. But watching in terms of the, cost to society, really fascinating what's happening. Fascinating what's happening with elections and with the dissemination of fake news and deep fakes. And I had a guy do a deep fake of me. Did you see this thing?
No.
It was really well done. And all my friends are like, what did you do? Is that your voice or is that your face? Or like, did you work with him? It's like, I did nothing. It's a picture of me animated. It's his voice. And people, they refuse to believe it. It's not even at the level of some of the other deepfakes that are out there for sure. But it was good enough.
Isn't
so all that
odd?
Stuff. Well, I think as a culture, so we got to figure that out. Like you talked to my son about it. He would be able to, without any stress, just sort of explain to you that like it's only your generation that's really confused
about it.
Yeah. And then he also would say, I stopped using it for the last year. So there's
a push and pull.
When you grow up with it, I think you have a different relationship with it. Now he grew up in Boulder where they have a lot of media literacy in schools. I think media literacy, it's something that we've talked about. I've blogged about.
You just call it media literacy.
Media literacy.
And what is that? Is that basically helping you to understand what goes on in the media?
It's being literate and being able to apply critical thinking to the stuff that you're digesting that's coming out of the media.
And they teach that in the classrooms here?
Versus blind acceptance, right? So someone who would be most susceptible to advertising would be someone who thinks that advertising has no effect on them, right? That's, someone who thinks that it has an effect and I've got to be aware of it and I should have an understanding of it, they're less susceptible. And I think that, you know, in terms of fake news or spin or understanding the source, all those things are much more dangerous and you are more susceptible if you don't apply critical thinking. So we're really supporting media literacy because critical thinking, whether it's media or anything else in your life, is a good thing to apply.
And are you involved in that process beyond just knowing what it is? Are you actively involved in?
We're taking 1% of our profits and we put it towards media literacy.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
You should, we're promoting it more now. You should say that more.
You should say that
more. Now I sound probably like you're immediately. Is there anything else I need to make him say that he's going to do more while he's here?
Well, we're not doing it to try to promote ourselves. We just think it's the right thing to do. We do have a lot of millennials here, and millennials as a generation, like any generation should, but they care about what you're about beyond just making money.
And so maybe it's not that you're doing it to promote yourselves, but look at the look I just gave you when you said it. I didn't know what you meant by it. Mm-hmm. And so that again is maybe just an indication of I'm not that smart. So that don't be surprised by that part.
It's not
a
people aren't talking about it enough.
Sometimes it's also just the term, right? So, I mean, we were talking about programmatic before we sat in here and what that is. And it's almost most CMOs, at least to some extent, probably know what that is to some extent now, but it's basically a form of biddable media.
Yeah.
And, when we started that company that we raised capital with here, it was a programmatic company. It still is. But we would call on CMOs and we would say, well, what are you doing in the programmatic space? And they would be like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
So you have to almost start using terms more to get people to, it's educating them. Mm-hmm. And then they can either choose to do it or not do it or whatever. But maybe there's, again, just some lesson in utilizing that term itself, media literacy.
And the media environment. I mean, the way that we think about it is if you're Patagonia, you make products. When you make products, those products pollute the environment, right? And you don't like that because the products are designed to experience the outdoors environment. We make products that go into the media environment. That media environment is very real. You spend a lot of time in it. You don't realize you're in it when you're in it. And it's only going to get more real with virtual reality. As someone who contributes accidentally, we never do it on purpose, but we accidentally create pollution in the media environment. We feel like stewarding and cleaning up the media environment falls to us, not us alone.
Sure.
But people like us.
Because you're you, you have the chance to sometimes, I guess we all have a chance to do things like that, but maybe you have a chance to be more heard because you're Alex Boguski as opposed to Sean Halter.
I think everybody has the exact, honestly, I think everyone has the exact same chance. And I've been lucky in that my parents always instilled that a kind of, it's not real courage. It's more, what's the worst thing that could happen? And so it is.
Remind me what your dad did. I apologize.
My dad was a graphic designer.
Okay, that's right. And your mom
still
was
still does logos on those crowdfunding sites. Yeah.
On crowdfunding sites?
Yeah, like 99 Designs, things like that. He's on there. Yeah, cranking out the work.
Has
loves
he ever done worked for you?
Oh, yeah. When early days of the agency, early days, when I'd go on vacation, I would pay him to come in and be me. And
that's funny.
Yeah, it was called New Sheriff in Town.
My daughter just was in the office this week. She's 15. She wanted to go to Portugal with her mom this year for a trip that her mom is taking. And I said, I'll pay half and you have to work the other half. She does graphic design. I wish she was a coder. I swear to God, I say this all the time. I'm begging her to be a coder because female coders they're unicorns. And she could let me retire.
As soon as you make a thing like at least with my son, anytime he'd show interest in a thing and I'd start to talk about, here's how you can make money in that thing. You know, he was like designing his own video games. I'm like, that's really cool. You could be a video game designer. And as soon as I do it, done with it. I finally learned my lesson. I'm like, I don't say anything.
So I should probably say, you should never clean your room. Maybe it will have the opposite.
I don't know if it's not so much reverse. It's just like, don't take the, you know, don't take the fun thing. Like if the fun thing accidentally becomes the money thing too, or just grows into that, I think that that's natural. And you're lucky you're in this business. I feel really lucky I'm in this business. I get to have fun all day.
Well, the beauty of this was maybe I don't know if I found the balance or not. You know, if she listens to this, she may say that I didn't, but I said, I'll pay half if you really want to go.
Yeah.
And if you'll work some of the other half, then that'll pay the rest. And so she now actually, we built her a template of the banners that we build for this show, for the CMO suite. We built her basically a template, and now she makes all of our social media banners for it. And so she's working her way through it. And she used to say, I never want to work for you, Dad. I want to go work for an ice cream shop. But she said to me on the way home yesterday, she's like, that was pretty cool.
That's interesting.
I could do that more often.
Yeah. I just had that conversation with my son, like, you know, cause I've always tried to steer him away from advertising. But then just this last week, I was like, maybe come here. You know, he's like, yeah, I think I'd be really good at it. I'm like, you probably would be.
I almost brought my daughter here because she's off of school. And so I was literally this close to bringing her here. She hasn't seen me do this live, but maybe I was trying to find again somewhere between that balance between not also making her feel like she's got to be my grip or my gaffer or whatever. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know.
Your kids are 14, you said?
They're 15, twin 15-year-olds.
My son ran away from home when he was 14.
How was that?
Terrible. Like,
how long was he gone?
Terrifying.
A couple hours?
No, like 3 days, 3 or 4 days.
Really?
Yeah, it was for real, you know.
What created that
terrifying
moment?
Well, he felt like I was putting pressure on him. School, right? I felt like I didn't have a more casual gear that I could slip into. Like, I was like, I barely care. But the reality was I was and I am excellent at silent judgment, which is just as bad.
Are you judging me right now?
No, yeah. I'm not.
So he was feeling judged.
He was, and feeling a lot of pressure. He ran away. We looked into like, how do you deal with a situation like this? His mother's Latin. She's really mad. Like, not dead to
there's
me,
no
mad.
There's no stereotype to it, but there's a 1 and maybe a 9. It seems like it jumps pretty fast.
She was hot. And so.
Did she feel like it was your fault?
No. She wasn't mad at me.
She was just hot.
Yeah. But he left a note, and then we didn't hear from him. And finally I was texting, and I was like, we got to call the police if we don't hear that you're safe. And he said he was safe. So we didn't know where he was, but we knew he was safe. And then next day I was like, if and when you want to come back, we can talk about how that looks. Yeah. Cause we went on the Google and we researched what he's supposed to do with runaways.
What did he tell you?
What did he say? Or
no,
what
did
the Google?
Tell you? What do you feel like you've got to
you don't just get to come back. There's like a negotiation. And it wound up being incredibly positive, because what we realized and what I realized was there was all these silent or unwritten deals that I thought we were in, right? But he didn't know what the deal was, because he never made the deal.
Yeah, you made them.
I made the deal, and I made it when he was 7, and then we continued to be in that deal. And so there were a lot of things that came out of that. And now we're best buds. So it was incredibly positive. And then everything that was unwritten, we essentially didn't write it down, but it was like the reason why I'll give you one other thing that came out of it. I used to try to motivate him with what I now call the tale of woe. You know, if you don't get good grades in school, you won't get in the right colleges. If you don't get in the right colleges, life's just harder. If if life's hard, you could wind up, you know, homeless down by the river. Right. And, I had this epiphany. I was like, I've never motivated an employee like that. Like, why am I using that on my son? And so I flipped it. I said, well, what I do with people is like, what is your wildest, you know, idea of success? What does that look like? And so I said, what would you forget jobs? If you could be doing anything, this is the question I think everyone should be asking. You could do anything and you can, what would you do? And he said, oh, I'd like to be in sort of an artist co-op. We'd make music. We'd do the visuals, the video, you know, the whole thing. And I said, I don't know what that is, but it sounds really cool. I might want to do that too. But what skills would you need to get between here and there? And then he kind of mapped it out and then went to art school. And, you know, that's no longer the dream, but it started that process, right?
We're going to wrap it here because we're running out of time. Normally we're trying to get the guests to cry. I'm literally tearing up here. That was such an incredible story. That was just an incredible story. And I thank you for telling that story. I hope beyond all the rest that we've talked about that all of us can take that moment away. That's such a powerful thing to say. I was quiet the whole time listening. Alex Bogusky, dear Lord, you made me cry. It's the worst podcast. You turned it the other way around. Damn you, Alex. Thank you for allowing us to be in the woodshed. Thank you for the time. I'm sorry if we ran a couple minutes long for your team. Thanks for being you. Thanks for being here and being open and being honest. And if nothing else, thanks for telling us that story at the end. It was incredibly powerful.
This was fun. Thanks for making space.
Thanks, guys. And continue to listen to the show. This is one of our last two episodes of the season. We're going to end it right here. Continue, please listen to the CMO Suite. If you want to reach Alex, find him Broguski on Instagram. Stalk him on LinkedIn. That's what I did. And it's the best way to try to find him. And of course, listen to The Woodshed. It's an awesome podcast. Thanks, and take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. For marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.